Our next guest is arguably the most well-known wild food writer in the country. His work has been published in Field and Stream, Pheasants Forever, Delta Waterfowl, Garden and Gun, but I'd say probably most prestigiously published as a monthly contributor to Great Days Outdoors magazine's Camp House Kitchen. We got Hank Shaw on the line. Hank, how's it going today?
It's going good. How are you doing?
We're doing good. We're watching this weather. We're looking forward to having you coming into town this week, but I don't know. You know, you came in last year and the weather sucked, and now you're here again, and I'm just kind of wondering if there's a theme.
I didn't think the weather was bad last year. I mean, you guys in the Gulf are, you know, it's a 6-foot waves and you guys kind of shrink, but you know, we're used to 8-10 foot waves in the North Pacific.
Yeah,
but,
that's
yeah, this time is legit suck. So, we'll see.
Well, you've got a new cookbook out. It's called Pheasant, Quail, Cottontail, Upland Birds and Small Game from Field to Feast. You're coming into town next week, going to have a book dinner at the Noble South in downtown Mobile. Tell us a little bit about Pheasant, Quail, Cottontail.
So, my first book came out in 2011, and that was kind of a little bit of everything. And then after that, I decided to do deep dives on every different thing that I spent a lot of time hunting. And the first one I did was all ducks and geese. And then the next one was all deer and elk and caribou and stuff like that. And then this is this sort of completes the set. It's all upland birds and small game. So there's whole chapters on turkeys and squirrels and rabbits and quail. And pretty much if it's not in the other two books, it's in this book.
Where do wild hogs fit into the picture here?
I knew you were going to. Okay, fine.
I got you.
You got me. So wild hogs, they're not in any of the three books, but the problem, you know, with writing a wild hog cookbook is it's like a pamphlet and then a bunch of pork recipes.
Because
there's not a lot different between a wild pig and a regular pig except for the fat content. And, you know, you do have to watch out for big boar hogs that smell like a locker room because,
right,
you know, they'll get boar tank because no one's sitting out there castrating them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, actually here in the South, we do have some guys that do it. They'll catch them with dogs and castrate them and let them go. And that's your bar hog is what they call those, B-A-R-R. And
right, but that's normally a farming term. But that's kind of sporty because then you got to go find that same pig again.
Yeah, and they get, you know, they grow much bigger in the wild once they do that. That's these
well,
pigs
sure.
Where you see Hogzilla,
no,
you know.
They're girls, all they want to do is eat.
That's right, that's right. But, back to Pheasant, Quail, Cottontail. If I understand, part of the proceeds from this book are going to, it's Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, is that right?
That's exactly right. I mean, one of the things I was really, really happy about is, you know, it's sort of been a progression of my career, and that the first book that came out, you know, I was staying on people's couches and sleeping in my truck, and you know, it was pretty threadbare that first trip, and each year I've been doing a little bit better and a little bit better, and you know, I'm still, you know, staying in cheap hotels, but at least I can fly and then rent a car as opposed to driving my truck around, and it allowed me for this book to actually be able to start giving back. And so a portion of the proceeds of every single book sold is going to go, I hope, to Quail Forever, because I'm mostly a quail hunter. But it's to both Quail Forever and Pheasants Forever. And it's strictly for habitat. And, you know, I think especially when it comes to upland game birds, they're not really in, some of them are in trouble, but a lot of it is contingent on what we do to help them. And I mean, everybody who's hunted bobwhites in the South knows that bobwhites need our help if we want to keep hunting them. And so I'm going to do my bit. And anyone who buys this book is helping that out.
Well, I commend you for that. That's very true here in the South. I mean, quail were, that was originally what everybody hunted. And now they're definitely under siege. Just based on kind of the changes in forestry practices, changes in agricultural practices, and some of the invasive species that have moved into the South over the last 30 years or so, and there's certainly a lot less Bob White's in the area. So it's good that we can, you know, you can give back to something that is going to improve the habitat for the area. Well, tell me about this book dinner that you've got next Thursday. You're going to be down at the Noble South in downtown yep. Mobile.
So I've actually got two Alabama events. We got one in Mobile, and that's Thursday, and that's at the Noble South, and that's kind of a book party. And then it'll be in Auburn on Monday after that. So Noble South is the format's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of past appetizers based off the book. And it's more of a cocktail party than a formal sit down thing. And I'll be there and I'll be signing books, and everybody who comes gets a book. And so it's your chance to pretty much stump the chump, if you think about it. Like, you know, come armed with some question about fish or game, and I'll try to answer it. But last night in Baton Rouge was pretty good. I made that challenge, and a couple of guys gave me some bowfin questions. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, and around here you may get some bowfin questions.
Hardest fish in the country to cook, right?
Yeah, well, you may get that, and you may get some gar questions around here as well. I know they do a lot of that over in Louisiana.
Than bowfin. Mm-hmm.
Well, so that, and folks, if you're interested in, if you want more information about that event at the Noble South, you can go over to thenoblesouthrestaurant.com/Hank Shaw, or you can check it out on the Great Days Outdoors Facebook page, Hank's Facebook page, Noble South Facebook page, wherever you want to go to find more information about that event. It's going to be a fun event, though. I'm looking forward to that. And a beer and wine is included, which is important.
Yes, very important. And last I checked, there were still maybe 20 seats left, tops. So if you're interested, you really should get on it pretty quick. And it's going to be a fun party, and you won't want to miss it.
No doubt about it. Well, you know what? I was surprised last year, Hank, when you were in town. You've got these books: Buck Moose, Duck Duck Goose, now Pheasant Quail Cottontail. And you know, I think a lot of people think of you as kind of a wild game cookbook author in a lot of ways. But man, you can cook some seafood. I'm excited to have you back down. You and I went last year and actually did some shrimping, and I'm telling you, I've never seen anybody make food from the bycatch, but you did it, and it was really good.
I love bycatch. I've been a deckhand, both commercially and on charter boats off and on, really my whole life, and a lot of what we got to keep was what the clients didn't want or what wasn't good for market. So I have a long, long love affair with weird stuff that comes up in nets or hooks, and so when we did that shrimp, that was crazy, like a recreational shrimp netting. That was pretty sweet. And God, what do we get? We got like two mantis shrimp, I think, and then we got a bunch of crabs and a lot of little shrimp, and then squid.
Yeah.
And it was just everything there. I'm like, oh, we can do this with that. Oh, we can do that with that. This is going to be sweet.
Hank, this is Alan. I've got a question about freezing fish. And, you know, mm-hmm. when we fish down here, we usually catch a lot, and we like to freeze it and, you know, save it for later. What is the best method for freezing fish?
It depends on what your fish looks like. So if it's if you're just starting with fillets, mm-hmm. then I would say your best bet is to vacuum seal it. And there's a trick to vacuum sealing fish. You can do one of two. You know, the bottom line is if you're going to vacuum seal anything, no matter what it is, it needs to be as dry as it can possibly be.
Okay.
And this is a huge problem with most people's vacuum sealing fish, is that the fish is still quite wet on the outside. Mm-hmm. And that ice is going to expand as it freezes, and it's going to pop the seal, mm-hmm. especially if you have a cheap vacuum sealer. Mm-hmm. If you're an outfitter, or if you catch hundreds of pounds of fish a year, you might want to consider dropping four bills and getting a good vacuum sealer, or even a really good chamber sealer. I have had chamber sealers in the past that are for regular people, and I think I'm actually going to try and save up and bite the bullet and get one that we use up in Alaska, they're kind of indestructible, and they use a big heavy plastic, but they're money. I mean, they never fail. Okay. They never break seal. You can have even some spines on your fish, and you'll be fine.
Okay. But it's important.
Short of that, you want to dry your fish as best as possible.
Yeah.
And another trick is to put a little piece of paper towel on the, you know how like a vacuum seal bag has got a bumpy side and a flat side?
Mm-hmm.
Put the paper towel on the bumpy side. And okay. then what that does, that soaks up a little bit more moisture, and it will help you keep sealed.
We've been talking to Hank Shaw about recipes, how to handle frozen fish, and a lot of other things. Hank, I've got another question. What is the most common mistake people make with venison when they cook it?
With venison, I would say it all boils down to this. They cook the tender parts too much mm-hmm. and the tough parts too little. it all boils down to that. I mean, I see people overcooking venison backstrap or tenderloin, and then I see them try to do something like a shank or a shoulder or a neck roast. Like they're like, "Damn, it's super tough." I'm like, "Well, you didn't cook it long enough. You know, it needs another hour or two, depending on how big your buck was." Mm-hmm. And you know, almost everything boils down to that.
That's a really good point. And some of the best cuts are, in my opinion, are the ones that people oftentimes throw in the grinder. I mean, to me, a neck roast, a venison neck roast, or venison shank is some of the best meat on the deer. But you got to know how to cook it correctly, and you got to cook it correctly. If you don't, it can be your worst experience with it. Too, but,
oh, I know. I mean, it's the first part of the deer that I eat. I usually end up with backstrap in the summer, where I'm like, yeah, you know, because backstrap is great, right? But it's just a steak, and if you eat a lot of steak, steaks can get boring. Where mm-hmm. the other stuff, it allows you to be more of a cook.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about small game. So, I mean, and you know, if you want to get into fish as well, one of the things I've noticed about you, Hank, is, and you do things backwards from what most people do, especially talking about fish, for example. When you clean a fish, you know, you might fillet that fish, but you're going to do something with the head and the backbone and maybe the collars before you ever, you're probably going to freeze the fillets. Is that right?
Well, it all depends on the fish. You know, when we were catching triple tail last year, you know, it's a huge bony fish, right?
Right.
So with gigantic scales. So, by the way, I did cook the skin off that triple tail, and it was fine. But it was definitely a chore scaling that thing. It's like a prehistoric monster.
You're the only person I know who makes, you know, essentially fish rinds. You know, not pork
yeah.
rinds, but you actually made fish rinds from the skin of that triple tail that we caught, and it was an amazing thing to see.
Oh, it was so good. So basically, you make it the same way you make pork rinds. You take like any kind of bass. You know, you want a fish that has a skin on it, and you scale it, and then you basically boil it just for a minute or two, and then what you want to use is a butter knife to scrape off all the extra meat and fat from the inside of the skin, and then you dry it either in the sun or I use a dehydrator, and then when it's pretty firm or even rock hard, then you throw it in the bacon grease or some kind of hot oil, and it will puff up just like a pork rind. And it's not fishy at all. And it's one of the coolest things I've done with weird bits of fish.
Well, that's one of the things I love about your recipes is that you take the odd bits and you cook them in such a way that people who are normally, you know, opposed to eating those parts of the animal, those parts of the fish, they would eat it, and they'd never know, and it'd be the best thing that they'd had. I know I was that way last year. You made I called it the bycatch risotto. It was unbelievable. But tell me about pheasant quail cottontail. What was your maybe favorite or most unique recipe in this cookbook?
Well, that's like saying who's your favorite kid. You have one, but you don't want to reveal it in public. but I, you know, I think one thing I love about this book is that it kind of sums up in the word diversity, because when you're talking about birds and small game in general, the diversity of not only the creatures that you're hunting, but the kind of environments that you're hunting them in, and then also the flavors that you get from them are unmatched in any other classification of game. I mean, you've got quail in the south versus, say, quail in, say, Arizona or in California, and they're all a little different. And then you've got six different species of grouse, and you've got you know, wild turkeys, and then you've got jackrabbits and squirrels, and so your ability to never get bored is pretty dramatic with small game. And the other cool thing about it is the interchangeability of it. So when we design the book, say we got a bunch of pheasant recipes, right? Well, or let's just say to wild turkey recipes. So we have a whole bunch of wild turkey recipes. And then you realize, well, there really isn't any reason why you couldn't do this with cottontail or why you couldn't do this with a pheasant. And so we actually hired an artist to design little icons that are on the side of every single recipe. So, I mean, if I list it as a turkey recipe, but you see like a little icon of a quail or of a rabbit next to it, you're like, oh, okay, I've got cottontail and I can use that. And then we did a whole recipe index in the back. So if you came home with a bunch of rabbits, right? And you're like, well, what recipe do I want to do? You can go to the back of the book and look up all the recipes that cover rabbits, and you'll find that there's about 100 of them.
Wow.
And so it gives you, the way we structure the book makes this book unique. There's no other book written that's ever been able to do this for all of these different animals that we hunt.
Well,
we're pretty proud of it.
Folks, if you want to get a copy, you can get one certainly on Amazon.com. It's probably the best place, I would imagine, Hank. But if you want to visit with Hank when he's in town, just go to thenoblesouthrestaurant.com/Hank Shaw. You can purchase a ticket for the event next week. Hank, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.